This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today.
We're in.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Coming to you today in Technicolor on the program. Lindsay Clancy's murder trial is in its second week at Plymouth Superior Court. Both sides agree she killed her three children. That's not up for debate. But the prosecution just spent a week showing a jury exactly how. And some of what they showed may be impossible to unsee. We're going to be talking about what's going on with the prosecution, what's going on with the defense, in a conversation we've been wanting to have for a while now. Criminal defense attorney Bob Mata is with us, host of Defense Diaries, to help break down where this is all going. My goodness. And of course, Robin Dreek here as well. Patrick Clancy testified that his wife, Lindsay, was having one of her best days on January 24th. She built a snowman with the kids, texted normally. And the prosecution says she opened Apple Maps to time the drive to a restaurant the family didn't normally use and tacked on a CVS errand that wasn't in prior text. They want the jury to believe that if she was having one of the best days, she couldn't possibly be in psychosis. Well, I mean, that's, I guess you could come to that conclusion if you don't understand mental health or psychosis, just through conjecture as a layperson. But that's really not how mental health works. Bob, how good are juries at understanding complex mental health issues that they're being asked to understand in a case like this?
Good question.
Not great.
Yeah.
As a general proposition, not great. And that's no indictment on the jurors themselves. It's humanity. You know, people come in with their predispositions and their biases and the way that they think about mental health and mental illness. And, you know, it's very difficult in a jury trial to change somebody's long-held beliefs in terms of how they feel about something in particular. And, you know, the concept that you're going to be able to put a couple of experts on that are going to explain it and the light bulb's going to go off just doesn't work that often. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's a frustrating thing. You know, they always, attorneys behind closed doors and sometimes openly, such as myself, always refer to an insanity defense as the defense of last resort. Mm-hmm. And it's for a reason. Because of what I just talked about, it is very difficult to change someone's perception and mind if they come into a trial feeling a certain way about mental illness, whether that be that they don't believe that the stories that they're being told, that this can actually be going on in somebody's mind, or as you pointed out, you know, that there's, you know, times where lucidity is happening in the throes of a psychotic break. You know, people just don't understand it if they haven't experienced it either firsthand or with a loved one that they've had to live with or live by or live through in terms of them going through a psychotic break. It's a really hard thing for people to understand and come to grips with. And then you compound that with the fact that here you have three beautiful little children whose lives were lost at the hands of the person who is sworn and genetically bound to protect them more than any other person on the planet, and people cannot put that aside to get to that other question.
Mm-hmm. So there's, as you said, I mean, the negative confirmation bias towards any abhorrent human being would do this, regardless of explanation, is, like you said, it's really hard to overcome, and who knows if they'll get there on this one. What I'm curious about, though, because of the psychosis aspect, which is hard to overcome because you're, like you said, you got to put your emotion aside and you got to look at the facts and data of the science behind this. But I'm also seeing, and that's what I'm curious about your thoughts, Bob, because you've been in a lot of courtrooms that may or may not have, or maybe I'm curious about what it takes to overcome that confirmation bias if you're going in thinking, no matter what you say to me, when a mother does this to her children, it's guilty, guilty, guilty. But what I'm seeing, if you can take that step back, is, and I said it to my wife, and she's like, yeah, that's pretty interesting and profound. the prosecution looks like, again, I'm just going from visuals in the courtroom itself and then from testimonies we're hearing. So I'm doing the best I can to wait to watch it the entire time like you are too. You see the prosecutor standing alone.
Yeah.
And all the victims, the three true victims are gone. And the other victims in this are family, friends, colleagues, and they're all on her side. And so you have the emotional and visual weight of that. And then, as we both commented on Kevin Reddington that first day, I was overwhelmed by him and the visual compassion he has for her in that courtroom, holding her hand. And then her behavior in that courtroom, everyone's always looking at the accused in the courtroom in all these cases. And I can tell you from all the cases you and I have covered, and well, I've covered with Tony the last 4 years, I've never seen any accused with her behavior in the sense that it's the only non-performative behavior I've seen. If you're looking at her as a behavioral just piece, she collapses unto herself the entire time, never looking up, never looking, engaging. What does the rest of the world see of me when I'm presenting this? Like a Donald Adelson, like a Corey Richens, like a Daybell Dingbat Vallo. You know, all these other people are performative and she's that. So with all these things, in your experience, are those the type of things that can get over that confirmation bias, or is it a lost cause, or what else would they need to do that?
I would hope so. You know, because if not that, then what? You know, I mean, Lindsey Clancy is completely oblivious to the fact that there's a camera in that courtroom. She is literally in a living hell. Like her entire life has been destroyed, and she's sitting through this trial, reliving it along with everybody else in that courtroom, and she is completely unaware, nor does she care, that there's a camera trained on her when she's weeping. It's heartbreaking. It's the most difficult trial that I've watched since I've started a podcast and streaming. I've tried some horrific cases and sat in those courtrooms, and this one is just hitting me differently. Like, yeah, I'm an emotional guy as it is, you know, but I found myself like just crying, yeah. Like off camera.
Everyone does. And there's no win here. I mean, no matter what the outcome is, I mean, you're not bringing back three babies. I mean, I only see the justice in this is if something can be done about the health system, you know?
Yeah.
I'm curious because there's a thought process here. Why did they take this to trial? Why did it go as far as it went? Why wasn't this not pled out? I know like she tried to go down that road. The state rejected that. I guess, you know, from a prosecution standpoint, what's the point of this trial? What are we putting into the ether, into our public system as an example that this trial is setting? What is the point? I guess, what is the point of this? I fail to see why this couldn't have been settled in some other way, shape, or form. The woman's never been asking for freedom. She said she's nuts. She needs help. She wants to be locked away in a mental health facility. At the end of the day, this is about which facility she goes to, a prison system, or she goes to a mental health facility. And yes, there's a possibility she could be released upon some certain time or whatever. But at the same point, her original request was not for that. It was just lock me away somewhere where my brain can be taken care of, basically.
Yeah, like, why no plea deal on this? That's what I'm curious.
Why?
Yeah,
why did we go this far with it? I'm racking my brain. And I guess the other question with that, too, it's kind of two-part, is are there other cases where it doesn't go this far, where there is clear psychosis going on and the state is wise enough to say, yeah, this probably shouldn't go to a trial. We are going to accept a plea. It's not freedom, but you're going to be locked away. Does that happen very often, or does the state typically just prosecute in a very black and white sort of way where mental health doesn't go into the equation and people who either understand it or they don't. It's almost like a flat earther versus not in some ways.
Yeah. Look, we talk about this a lot on our show here. And this is a situation wherein we're in an election cycle. The DA in Plymouth County is up for election.
There we go.
And in our chat And I am in no way, shape, or form maligning anybody in terms of their opinions on this, because I realize people have strong opinions and people are entitled to their opinions, and I respect them. I may disagree vehemently, but I respect the fact that people feel a certain way about it. And when you look at our chat, it's a perfect example of the, you know, who the voters are. And if you are in a county where, you know, the uproar is like, my God, this woman did this to her own children, I need her to pay. I don't give a shit what was going on with her mentally. She did the unthinkable, and there is no excuse. I don't care what her mental state was. And, you know, if you're trying to get elected, you're going to bend to the will of the people. Now, you know, do I think that the proper move would have been to negotiate a plea agreement wherein her being institutionalized in a mental health facility would have been the proper thing to do? Of course I do, because I think what this trial is doing is perpetuating our ignorance as to mental health and mental illness in this country as a whole. That's what it's doing. You know, if you look at other countries around the world and how they treat mothers, like, men, we don't understand it. We don't understand the massive amount of hormonal changes that go on within the human body and the mind when you give birth to another human being. We can't fathom it as men, you know, and I feel I'm very reticent to speak on it, because it's none of my concern, because I can't speak on it from a place of personal experience.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's not my place to speak on it, but from what I've heard, and we're going to be doing a mental health awareness live on an off day of this trial. And I have had our community members who are incredible have been sending, I think I've broken 100 emails of people willing to share their personal mental health battles and their stories and their testimonials that are going to blow people's mind. These are real people with real stories that are willing to share in order to try to educate the public in terms of what mental health is and what mental illness is. And we need to shed all the negative connotations that come along with it. It's to the point in our society where people will not come forward with their issues out of fear of reprisal, you know, and it cannot be that way. That's the opposite of what these folks need. People need treatment. They need to feel that they can come forward and talk about it openly without being maligned by the general public. And, you know, to me, this trial is doing the exact opposite of it. And it's to feed the beast, the we want an eye for an eye. Three beautiful little babies lost their lives, which everybody who's watching this trial feels that to the core of their soul. All of us do. Don't confuse the fact that I believe that Lindsey Clancy was abandoned and led astray by the medical community and her treating physicians to the point where they drove her to madness, with me not feeling the incredible weight of the loss of those three kids, because those two things exist at the same time. They are not mutually exclusive things, and people need to come to grips with that, because I'm telling you right now, take a look online, spend about an hour online just scrolling through. We are our societies, not just in the US, everywhere, we've lost our fucking minds.
Yeah.
Like the people on Earth, and I don't know if it's these devices and all the shit that's running through our brains in terms of visible waves that we're walking through. I don't know what's going on, but we have lost our damn minds. I mean, you see it constantly. Just seriously, spend 30 minutes online and just doom scroll and look at what is going on out there. If that is not indicative to you that there is something going on that is profoundly wrong and that it's affecting us in our brains, I can't help you. I just can't. Yeah.
Well, you hit it right there. You said online. And, you know, if you look at the laws of averages and stats on all this, it's actually, it's a safer place to be in the world right now than it's ever been. COVID took a huge hit on the mental health of the entire world. But at the same time, though, the doom scrolling online is because friggin' ad space, revenue, algorithms, you know, and so it's feeding the inner stupid beast in us. And a key point I know I keep making on this case is this is the only case any of us have ever said, oh, this not guilty by reason of sanity, and it's a different the wording on the statute in up there is different than here. I think not criminally culpable or something like that.
Lack of criminal responsibility.
Yeah, it's the only time. I mean, we don't Nick Reiner. No way. Life arc. I mean, they're still going to battle it, but here we got a life arc of behavior of bad. We have Lori Daybell-Val, life arc of behavior of bad. Corey Richens, you know, we got some, you know, hiding shit from people. So there's all these aspects of people's lives where there's a lack of transparency. There's a lot of unhealthy relationships. It wasn't just a one-off. This is such a deviation. That's the difference from all the other mental health issues, because all these other people are suffering mental health challenges as well. They're all complete nutters. But the difference between just a regular nutter that does horrendous things to individuals and a psychosis is what we're seeing here. Psychosis with command voices that she was suffering. Again, this is just what the experts are saying. Again, we'll see more when more of them testify. That's what the real difference in this case is. It's all those other things that have failed on top of the psychosis, which, as every single professional will tell you, and Siobhan Scott did for us as well, it's 1 in 1,000. Postpartum depression, 1 in 10 for women. Postpartum psychotic event is 1 in 1,000. Then you throw on bipolar, which she was also diagnosed with, and 13 different medications, and no clear one person, you know, deconflicting and coordinating all the medications, as is going to be testified, and it's already come out already in some. That's the soup of horrendousness.
The prosecution wants the jury to believe that switching medications and visiting multiple providers wasn't desperation. It was a woman trying to game the system. That's what they're trying to pitch. I mean, this is why, to me, like, it feels like flat earthers to a certain extent. It's like, really? Like, I've seen that. We've all seen that in cases. This ain't that. And they had something to work with. She did visit multiple providers. She did get prescriptions from at least 3 sources in under 4 months. But these are not recreational drugs. I mean, how can you make the doctor shopping or pill shopping argument? I mean, if you're not even talking about that type of drug and you're not talking about that type of behavior, she's reaching out for help over and over again, being turned away, getting short little visits here and there that aren't helping her. I don't see where people can land where they land on this case unless they simply choose not to hear the facts.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yesterday was a perfect example wherein you had the Commonwealth standing up, reading cherry-picked portions of a journal that Lindsay was keeping with regard to her baby son and her son's inability to sleep, and she, you know, like in her struggles, and she's documenting it all. And she, and the Commonwealth is up there cherry picking, knowing damn well that Kevin Reddington has those journals, that Kevin Reddington is going to stand up directly after that woman does what she does in that courtroom in terms of cherry picking things in order to frame it a certain way. And he's going to blow it apart by putting the context in which those things were written, by saying what she had written just before and just after. There's a little context for you. How they're trying the case, to me, is despicable. It truly is. If you want to bring your case, bring it on all fours. Bring it with integrity. Bring it. If you have the facts, then bring it that way. Don't play carny games with the jury. I just have no respect for it. You know, this trial is too important. This issue is too important for them to be trying this case in the way that they are. They're leaning completely into wringing the pathos, the empathy, the sympathy out of the jury by hammering them over the head with the fact that these 3 beautiful little babies were killed at the hand of their mother.
And so here's another thing on this one, on her behavior arc, which I think the prosecution did a horrendous job, again, and well said, Bob, of choosing the motive. the motive of saying, I'm paraphrasing it because I've read it a few times. I'm not reading it specifically, but the intent of what they're saying is that she got frustrated and overwhelmed with being a mother, didn't want to do it anymore. And that's why they're cherry picking out of her journals and everything. Okay. So here's another behavior deviation, which it does nothing supports it. So let's take on face value that, and Patrick even said it, she was very scheduled, she's written it in journals how hard she's working, how hard she's trying. Some people said she's might be even overachiever, she's very focused, she's very driven. Okay, so show me that human being, tell me other times that she quit. Yeah. What other times in her life did she get so frustrated by what she's facing as a hard charging type A that she decided to throw in a towel and quit? And that this was an arc of her escalating from failure to failure to failure. She kept failing and quit, kept failing and quit, kept failing and quit. So it ramped up to the fact that she was so overwhelmed that it went from the next degree of killing her kids. There's zero in her life that we've seen so far of her facing a life struggle, facing a life challenge, and giving up and quitting, let alone killing her kids. Again, another data point for psychosis, a major deviation. So I think that what the prosecution is saying is completely implausible from all the data that they're presenting. Nowhere in her journal did she say where she quit. Nowhere anywhere she's saying, I gave up because it was too hard. No, it's nowhere. And so that's where that's why, to your point, Bob, they're doing a horrendous job, because it doesn't make sense. What they just said makes no sense from what they're portraying.
I think it's worse than that. I think it's disingenuous. Yes. You know, that's the part that bothers me. You know, the Commonwealth knows all this. They're walking into that court of law, having all the knowledge that Kevin Reddington has about Lindsey Clancy and who she was prior to this act, what kind of mother she was, what she did for a living. I mean, the woman is a labor and delivery nurse, or she was, you know, she
delivered and saved babies and saved women.
Right. I mean, that's what she does. The woman clearly loved her children. This concept that they came up with, this bizarre motive of pill and doctor shopping, is the most ridiculous thing that I've ever heard. Yeah. You know, if you're going to attack the mental health aspect of the statute, then do that. Don't do it in such a way that you're creating some ridiculous motive. Like, yeah, that is clearly all you have to do is read or listen to the words that she wrote in her own journals. Thank God she wrote the journals.
Yeah,
they absolutely tell you the story. If somebody's going to sit there and say that these were premeditated, that's just a steaming pile of bullshit, because I guarantee you she kept journals for all of her kids because that's who she was. Mm-hmm. That's how into being a mother and how important every aspect of her children's lives was to her, that she journaled them. She kept track of everything that was going on in her kids' lives. She was that mother. You know, and to have this dichotomy of what happened to them, which is unthinkable, they just don't coincide with one another, but for the fact that she was deeply, deeply mentally ill.
Yeah. I feel like there's the elephant in the room. It's people not seeing the forest before the trees. And it's so it's like, how are you not seeing this? I'm not arguing anything crazy. It's like, how are you not seeing the reality of what's going on with this person unless you are willingly choosing not to see it? Because it's too scary to think that people can fall into these sort of mindsets, into these sort of horrific psychosis states. And it's horrifying to think of what they're possibly capable of. And other than just not wanting to accept that the human brain is capable of that, I don't see any other reason why people refuse to go down that road. I don't know. It baffles me. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. I loved what you said about the integrity here. Don't play carny games with a jury. That's what this is really feeling like.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Let's move over to another conversation, more about the defense of Lindsey Clancy. The prosecution spent its first week building the intent case against Lindsey, but some of the most damaging testimony for the state came out of their own witnesses on cross-examination. Patrick Clancy testified under oath that not one of Lindsey's providers told him it was unsafe to leave her alone with the children. She had been to the ER for S-ideation. Some providers knew about intrusive thoughts involving the kids, and nobody seemed to weigh just how serious her condition was. At the end of the day here, who put those children in danger? Because it doesn't seem like it's Lindsey Clancy. She's talking to doctors. She's expressing herself. The only thing she didn't say was the voices, but she did talk about intrusive thoughts. She did talk about having these feelings, and nobody once said to Kevin, hey, you know, don't leave her side right now. Like, just don't. I mean, honestly, the real answer, if it didn't have to do with insurance providers and getting approved to be in a hospital for X amount of time, she probably should have been institutionalized somewhere. But because we have the jackass insurance situation that we do in our country, I'm sure she couldn't be. Other than that, it feels like the providers, I don't know, do they not take this seriously enough? Is this just something where, well, in most cases, it turns out okay, so we don't want to alarm anybody. I don't know why there was no intervention here, or at least something said to Kevin of, hey, don't let her be alone with the kids right now, just in case.
Yeah, I mean, here's what's going to come out during the defense's case in chief. And remember, you know, like any other trial that you've ever watched, the state goes first. And yep. Then... you know, as defense attorneys, we're always begging the jury, please wait. Don't reach a conclusion until you've heard all the evidence. Please wait, which is, it's a tough ask.
Yeah.
Because we're human beings and we form opinions early on in things. Some people form opinions during openings, and that's not even evidence. It's just a statement of the facts as to whatever the state's theory and the defense's theories are. But people still reach conclusions on that front. But what we're going to find out is that she was misdiagnosed early on. So like when they missed the fact that she had postpartum with her second child, but more importantly than that is that she had a manic event and they were unaware of it going into her third child. So when she has Callan and you know, postpartum doesn't necessarily start immediately. When she starts to have the effects and she's feeling it and, you know, and then they don't look back at what was going on the last time she had it and seeing that she had this manic event, which is indicative of, you know, onset bipolar. And then they diagnose her with just postpartum. They ignore the bipolar aspect of it. And then they prescribe her SSRIs and they put her on benzos. So you have this thing where I like, and none of the providers are speaking to one another. Like, mm-hmm. So as she's moving from doctor to doctor, because they're, you know, no one's helping her. Like she's going in and saying, you gave me this and it's making it worse. You have Patrick calling and saying what you did, what you gave her has made her 10,000 times worse than she was prior to, you know, help us. Can somebody help us, please? And what you have is a situation is how are the providers who have misdiagnosed and are not speaking to one another supposed to warn Patrick of just how dangerous she could be? You know what I'm saying? Like that's what's going to happen here. That's what's going to be evident after all their experts testify, is that's what happened here, that they didn't know to warn him. Because, look, this kind of level of violence against one's own child, if you're the mother, is relatively rare. It certainly happens. But, you know, I don't think that a provider is going to immediately jump to, hey, you know, you can't have her anywhere around your kids. And when she's moving from treater to treater, and again, they're not speaking to one another, there's no continuity in the treatment. They don't know, the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. And it turned it into just an absolute nightmare result.
Yeah, I think they were facing their own confirmation biases, given her background, given her professional reputation as a labor and delivery nurse, you know, and the fact that she was being so transparent. She must be going to be transparent about everything, except I think their lack of knowledge of truly what a psychotic event could look like and how it manifests or not manifest outwardly is what one of their downfalls was on this. And I wanted to really highlight, because you mentioned his name again, the husband, Patrick. What really, I watched his entire testimony too, extremely compelling. Oh, but you know what was amazing to me? Because again, we all of us on our show are so empathetic. We reverse that context and place ourselves in his shoes. And I was amazed at his depth of field of what his wife was going through, her appointments, her medications, the effects. I mean, he was all in on his wife and what she was going through as her partner in this. Again, when we're looking for clues to unhealthy relationships, to a mother who, according to the prosecution, was trying to get out of life, trying to get out of this, this is not the type of relationship you see when someone's all in. Someone's so all in that he's standing by her side after the divorce, after she killed his kids. And even after he's remarried, still standing by her side because he understood what was going on so much. So props to him on that. And God bless his new wife as well. That's got to watch her husband now go through and stand by another woman. I mean, there's a lot going on there that really speaks, I think, to the character. And when you can understand the character of one, you get a bigger snapshot of everyone involved. Because I know someone in the chat had mentioned, you know, what's her background? Middle income family. Great parents, described by neighbors as consistently wonderful, very nice people, family, good neighbors, no history of trauma, no history of anything else. She's on high school tumbling teams. I mean, just a hardworking kid from a hardworking family that's standing by her as well. The arc is a very, very solid arc from everyone involved right up to her husband's.
Yeah, and I mean, she's a labor and delivery nurse, you know.
My daughter is too, and I know how they care. So, and you know, it's interesting, you know, being the baby nurse, you know, and I see this with my own daughter, it's about delivering the babies. The number one reason my daughter does it is women's health. It's all about women's health. And so so she's all in on women's health, and the women's health system failed her. Yeah.
But remember, the prosecution told us it's not about women's health. It's not about the doctors and the medical system that failed miserably. Just put that out of your mind, everybody, that, you know, we bounced her around from here to there. We misdiagnosed her. We gave her the wrong meds. We didn't get her a doctor when she called and needed it. We kicked her out of the hospital. We did all the, but it's not about that. It's not about that. She's doctor shopping. She's doctor shopping. Look out. Woo! Lindsay Clancy, the doctor shopper. It's insane.
Man, how can a female prosecutor in good conscience walk into a court of law and opening statements, and it's the first shit that comes out of her mouth? That's what I'm talking about. It's so disingenuous. You know,
well, you see incongruence of her behavior,
the system
though.
On trial, which we are, and Kevin Reddington's making damn sure that's exactly what's going to happen on this trial. The healthcare system is going to be squarely on trial here. They're going to be in the crosshairs of Kevin Reddington, and he's going to make no bones about it. Again, the state knew that. Mm-hmm. The Commonwealth knows that going in, yet they're doing it the way that they're doing it, knowing what's coming, and they just don't care. And look, man, it's
I'm sure the prosecutor has a lovely future ahead of her as a lobbyist for the healthcare industry.
And this is just a response to one of our chat people as well. They wanted to know where to send letters of support. I looked it up. So nothing you can send directly to her, but you can actually send it through her attorney. Kevin J. Reddington. And this was posted. He posted earlier on to get support letters that he filed. And it's 1342 Belmont Street, Suite 203, Brockton, Mass. 02301. So it's her attorney's office. That was listed online, was where I got it.
The civil case, both Lindsay and Patrick have filed separate civil lawsuits against her healthcare providers. The father of three dead children looked at the same evidence the jury is seeing and decided the doctors are responsible. Some are saying they need her to be found not guilty by reason of insanity so they can profit. That, I mean, I don't know. I'm always amused by where people go and like, yeah, they're doing this for profit. Yeah, he's finding a way to make money off of his three dead children and his disabled ex-wife. That's the whole goal here. It's to make a couple bucks. These people's lives were destroyed. What do you say to people who think this is somehow a money grab? I know you respect the listeners. I do too, to a certain extent. what do you say to that when you hear an argument like that? I just want to. I don't want to say what I want to do.
I know, and you know, I feel the same way deep down. You know, but having practiced law for as long as I did and been a trial lawyer, you know, I approach it in a different way. And what I do is I ask people to try to have an open mind, to just listen, mm-hmm. to allow yourself the opportunity to listen and maybe learn something that you didn't know, which mm-hmm. may in turn change the way that you feel about something. Me screaming something at somebody that they need to feel this kind of way does nothing.
Sure.
If they allow themselves to have an open mind and say, you know what, I'm going to listen and I'm going to see what I can see. And you know what, if they allow themselves that grace and they give themselves that opportunity, you hope that they'll learn something and that will in turn change the way that they think about something. Because I'm here to tell you, if you are of the mindset that mental health and mental illness is a fairy tale, that it's not something that profoundly impacts the way that people live and fundamentally changes who they are as a human being, I'm here to tell you, you're wrong. But don't take my word for it. Look into it yourself. You know what I mean? It's like, that's all you can do, man. You know, you can't pound people over the head by calling them morons. That ain't it. That's not how this thing works. You have to hope that people will take the time and go in it with an open enough mind to listen, you know, because it's one thing, there's a difference between hearing something and listening to something.
True.
You know, and you just hope that people will be willing to do that. And my hope, my deep, deep hope is that this trial, along with the civil trials, that really opens some people's minds, you know, because Tony, it is not an easy thing for 12 people in that box to sit there and essentially in their own mind say, I'm giving her a pass.
No.
After what she did. It's not an easy ask. And I don't want to in any way, shape or form diminish how huge of an ask that is for a human being to do, because it goes against everything that we believe fundamentally in terms of wrong versus right. You know what I mean? It's a hard place to get people to. And I'm hyper conscious of that. You know what I mean? It's like, I realize that, I respect it. And all I can do is ask people to go into it with an open mind and reach the conclusion themselves. That's the only way. Yeah.
And I think there's so many cases where if Lindsay Clancy's behavior had been dramatically different, if she hadn't been asking for help, acting like everything's fine and okay, I mean, we'd be having a very different conversation here. I think that's the disturbing thing of this case is she did everything right. She did everything begging for help, and it failed her over and over. Now, I'm not somewhere where it's like, well, rely on the system to fix everything. No, I mean, you do have to have your own accountability to a certain extent, but when your brain is working against you the way it was with her, and even the people who did have their wits about them still couldn't win with a system that was failing her. I just don't see any way this. I mean, this is a very odd case. It's an extreme case, but a prime example of how the system can fail so remarkably, and an example of, okay, let's take a look at this. What needs to be done so the next Lindsey Clancy doesn't end up here in this situation, and we're not having to have this trial, and these kids don't have to be dead either.
Here's something I don't want to lose on this too.
Yeah,
the system failed her. But individuals involved in this, these are really good people too. And that's why it is a system. It's a systemic problem with the system, not the individuals, because she's going to mental health. I mean, I haven't seen everyone we've seen so far is a very compelling, great human being. I mean, I don't think she went and was seen by evil people. It's like, oh, I'm going to screw this woman and not give her the right meds. I mean, it was really everyone was doing the best they could. They just didn't have a system to do the best they could with.
Yeah.
And that's what failed her because I don't want, if it goes the way of the defense and she winds up, serving a most likely, and I looked at stats on this, her probability of serving a life behind bars in a psych institute is very high, probably never getting out. And you wouldn't want those people that actually were trying to do the right thing, but a system didn't set up for them to do the right thing, to unduly suffer from this as well, because they are. Can you imagine having been her providers in hindsight right now? That's a nightmare as well. I mean, everyone touched in this everyone's a victim. This is the most wide sweeping victim thing we've ever seen.
I don't think anybody's sitting there going, oh, I'm so glad this worked the way it did. I mean, it failed. Yeah. It was a failure. How can it be done better so it doesn't happen? That seems 100%. That should 100%. Be the goal. Not where do we lock up the very broken human being now who was failed by this. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue to follow this case for you every single day. Right here. And I know Bob is doing the same thing over on Defense Diaries. So please do go check it out. And the commentary all throughout the day over there at Defense Diaries.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.